Hello and welcome to this, the 36th episode of the Pure Football flagship podcast show. This is your host for the evening, Owen Brown. I'm joined today by Gavin Miller. Gavin, how are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, thank you very much. To all our listeners, I hope that you've enjoyed the Pure Championship podcast episode with Cammy and Chris. If you have done, please leave a review for them. I think they would really appreciate it. And I believe that there's more to come in terms of a look at that league. On tonight's show, we are going to be looking at kind of three things. So we're going to have a discussion about injuries in the Scottish divisions. We're going to do a little bit of match analysis. So we've got some matches from different levels this week. A game from the Scottish Premiership, one from the Scottish Cup, and two from a little bit lower down the SPFL tiers. And we're going to end on a discussion of strips, football strips. A little look at some strips that we like, don't like, all sorts of discussion around that. So that's our running order. Firstly, tonight, just want to kind of have a brief moment to say rest in peace to Fernando Rixon. So Fernando died at the age of just 43 last week from motor neurone disease, which is terribly sad. Such a very young age to pass away at, and from such an awful disease. I think it's really important that we pay our respects to him as a footballer. I think he must have played almost 200 games for Rangers, had you know, 12 caps for the Netherlands. I think he got two Scottish Premier League titles and two Scottish Cups his time at Rangers. Also got a UEFA Cup at Zenit St. Petersburg. We're recording this on Tuesday evening. I think that his funeral is actually tomorrow afternoon in Glasgow. And yeah, it's just really important, I think, that we pay our respects to him as a footballer, and also in respect of all he did in terms of his battle against a very difficult disease, and the fundraising that he did in respect of the fight against motor neurone disease. If you want to, I suggest that you check out an article by Jordan Campbell in the Athletic website, where he paid a trip to Fernando Rixon's hometown and kind of spoke to people that were close to him. So to move forward from that, but to stick with Rangers and also Celtic, I think we need to give a quick celebration of the fact that there has been a little bit of Europa League coefficient gravy through the past week. So Celtic with a really creditable draw away to Rennes, and Rangers with a really quite brilliant win at home to Feyenoord, really keeping things looking positive in those groups for those teams. So that's excellent. And continuing to keep our eyes slightly on European football, this week in the round of 32 in the Women's Champions League, we've got second legs for Hibs Ladies away to Slavia Prague and Glasgow City, who host Chertanovo. Just want to wish best of luck to both those teams, and I would urge you, if you can get along to the Glasgow City game, it's on Thursday night of this week at Petershill Park, which is in North Glasgow at Springburn. That's Thursday at 7:30, so definitely worth checking out those games, and you know, giving our support to our teams in Europe. So another kind of key event in football this week has been the return to senior first team football of Kieran Tierney, making his debut for Arsenal in the Carabao Cup tonight. During recording, it sounds like he's been impressing Arsenal fans by some kind of tweets that I've had a look at. What are your thoughts, Gavin, on how Kieran Tierney will get on there and his kind of return from injury and so on?
I think he's going to, you know, be a fantastic addition for Arsenal. And first of all, it's great to see him back playing football. The game's obviously on at the moment as we record, and it looks like he's going to play the full match. So that's, you know, that's really good, really good progress. I think in terms of how he fits at Arsenal, I think it's a great fit. I think he's, to me, he's, you know, the sort of player that exactly what they were looking for. For me, they've been a little bit too suspect, a little bit too soft defensively. And I think Tierney will, you know, assert himself as the number one left back for Arsenal. I think he'll have a huge part to play in terms of his leadership, his drive, his work rate, all these things that, you know, encourage other players as well, that are a little bit intangible, but are really important. So I think that Arsenal have got a great player now. I think from a Scotland perspective, it's fantastic for us to have, you know, two unfortunately, both elite left-backs playing at the highest level. So hopefully Steve Clarke can figure out a way to get both those players in the side.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really good to have our best left-back back from injury. So, in all seriousness, yeah, I completely agree with you. It's absolutely fantastic to see him back playing and playing at, well, you know, going to be playing at a high level. I think Arsenal play Manchester United next, and it will be very interesting to see if he starts that game. Hector Bellerin, right-back, was on the bench for their game tonight, also returning from an injury, a more long-term one. So it'll be interesting to see if Arsenal start those two as their full-backs in their next league match. They might potentially be one of the strongest full-back pairings in the league. I guess, you know, maybe only behind Andy Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah.
It's kind of up for debate. But yeah, impressive to see how he does. And also, I think, you know, really encouraging to see that he seems to have returned from his injuries really well, and he's looking, he's in incredibly good physical shape, so good credit to him for getting through that, and we're very excited to see how he does. Speaking of, you know, injuries, and you know, somebody that has kind of recovered through that and looks set to be you know, past having that kind of injury problem, you and I were having a little bit of discussion earlier this week about the kind of extent of injuries in the Scottish leagues at the moment. And this was kind of kicked off by some hesitance we had about the signing of Graham Dorans for Dundee.
Yep.
So Dorans has, you know, obviously had a very long injury, knee problem, that's kind of kept him out, you know, with slight gaps since, you know, I guess maybe May of last year. He's had an operation, as far as I understand it, but you know, he's 32 years old and has had a long time without minutes. So just wanted to get your thoughts, Gavin, on his situation for Dundee, your kind of thoughts in terms of the kind of general injury situation for any other clubs, anything that you find kind of interesting, any concerns you have about signing kind of older players with injuries, and also, if you have, if you want, what's the worst injury that you've seen somebody have, maybe while you've been playing football?
Okay. Yeah, so first of all, if you want a little bit more in detail about this, the guys on the Championship pod spoke about this as well. But my take on it is it's a high-risk signing in a position that Dundee don't need to strengthen right now, with, to me, little to low reward. So in terms of, you know, the way that I view it, that's alarm bells and flags for me to avoid at all costs. You know, he's not going to be going there on a you know, a pay as you play deal or anything, you know, that you would imagine is overly financially viable for Dundee, to make it, you know, make sense for them. So, and it's a position where they've got, you know, quite a lot of players and quite a lot of depth. So I really don't like the signing. I don't like taking gambles on older players when you could be giving those minutes to, you know, a younger player who doesn't have a history of injuries. So for me, it's a big no. And there was a debate on Twitter that I posted: is he the best player in the Championship? Some people said hands down. I'm not so sure. But yeah, so for me, it's a no.
You want to? Well, I guess I just wanted to say I completely agree with you in terms of whether it's actually a good fit or not. I mean, I guess you could say that Dundee have got people that they've only brought in fairly recently, like Byrne and Ness. They've also got Finlay Robertson, who's incredibly young, has done really well. And you might say that, you know, maybe a team like Dundee maybe needs to look more at strengthening in defence and things like that.
Yep.
The recruitment doesn't seem, in general, to maybe match up with the needs at Dundee. You know, a bit at odds with things, given they've got kind of three centre forwards that might be potential starters, but are now only playing one up front, and it's leaving our guy Andrew Nelson stuck on a bench.
Yeah.
But yeah, so but my main concern about Dorans, I guess, is beyond the age, just that, you know, knee injury. Hopefully for him, you know, and obviously very supportive of players that have gone through injuries, hopefully he is through that, you know, and the operation is a success and he goes on to have a lot of minutes this season for Dundee and plays really well. But just, I would have concerns about that. And I guess there are some other teams with kind of similar issues for me. So maybe one of those to talk about is Aberdeen. So as an example, Aberdeen, you know, signed in the summer Craig Bryson, who was somebody who was a little bit older and had potentially had some injury problems before. He's out again now for a month. It is an ankle issue, but my understanding is it's a different ankle to the one that he's previously had kind of significant problems with. However, it is kind of interesting that, you know, as you age, you're more likely to pick up injuries, and it is a problem for Aberdeen, a problem that you might, with hindsight, say would be a possibility with a player of that age and that kind of history. And it's perhaps compounded for Aberdeen by the fact that they have now, Scott Wright is out till, I think, maybe the end of the season, maybe, you know, near about that with the cruciate ligament injury. Scott McKenna is out for a little bit at the moment as well. And Funso Ojo, key midfielder for them, is out for about 3 months with a hamstring injury. So do you have any thoughts about them, Gavin, or Bryson, or anything around those?
Yeah. I was just going to say, can we rewind to when Aberdeen first signed Craig Bryson? And I'm pretty sure we had a conversation about this risk attached to that player. Yep. I feel like, can somebody just at a club listen to us? We don't talk total nonsense all the time. Because, it was really clear to see. And, you know, his minutes at Derby, if he's not playing regularly, to me, that's another sort of alarm bell in terms of he's coming off an injury. He's going to be rusty. His body's not going to be used to playing, you know, regular football, which to me is probably going to increase the likelihood of an injury. And here we are talking about Craig Bryson being injured and going to miss, you know, a substantial amount of game time for Aberdeen right now when, you know, they don't really have that depth in midfield. Lewis Ferguson's going to be having to, you know, cover the full central position himself almost.
Yeah, I guess so at least in possession they can continue to just bypass it, but it's already... a bit of a problem area for them in terms of when they don't have the ball, I think. So, yeah, good luck to Ferguson. That's going to be a very, very tough gig for the next few months. Go ahead, Gavin, what were you going to continue to say there?
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, I feel that clubs are too... There's too much of, like, buying into what they think they know rather than what they actually know how it sort of comes across to me. I feel like, you know, they've probably looked at Craig Bryson's CVs, former Scotland international, all like, what, two caps or whatever it was, and then look at, oh, he's played in the Championship, and it just feels like, oh, that's like ticking the boxes when really there's probably more to it, and that's just how it comes across. I'm assuming there's a little bit more to it than that, but it feels very narrow-minded with these sort of signings, and we see it far too often in the league. I guess... You know, Stephen Naismith's another example at Hearts, and albeit he's a huge player for them when fit, but if you look at his injury time over the last, you know, in fact, over his full career, he's had quite a lengthy spell, you know, on the sidelines of that career. So, great player, but it's another risk that you're bringing into your club. But I guess with Naismith, you probably know what you're getting when he's fit, and you know what he delivers and how important he is. So that risk you can maybe accept. Whereas you look at, you know, some of these other players, to me it just feels like you'd be better giving minutes to your younger players or your players that are in their sort of, you know, prime age sort of curve for playing. So, yeah, it's just a basic strategy that to me just doesn't, I don't like.
Well, I mean, I guess that while you did kind of point out that maybe we'd said about the risk with Bryson earlier, and, you know, we have kind of flagged up some other things around this kind of area, the one thing I did want to kind of maybe accept is that given the injuries that Rangers have had to Ryan Kent and Jordan Jones, we had kind of earlier talked about perhaps there being too much congestion around those kind of attacking midfielder winger positions for Rangers, and maybe the need for some people to get out and get minutes elsewhere. And, you know, we saw Jake Hastie did go, you know, down south and get a loan move. But, you know, maybe this, the risk that this can just happen out of nowhere to players who aren't older and that maybe you would think it's a lesser risk, you know, this can happen. So it's a difficult thing to deal with, I think, just to kind of, you know, put that kind of counterbalance and just say.
Yeah, I guess my thinking on that though is like injuries is part of the game full stop, but it's just depending on how much of a risk you're willing to accept with a player with a history of it,
yeah,
I guess.
Absolutely.
Versus...
I agree with that, so. And I think there were a couple of other examples as well that I just wanted to mention too. So suddenly with Simunovic and Nir Bitton out again. Celtic have kind of gone from maybe feeling a wee bit more secure about their central defence, and I know that Abdelhamid can, you know, move in and potentially play centre back, but that makes them look a little bit thin again there. And given that Simunovic has had some injury issues in the past, maybe that's something that they should be considering about, you know, somebody with this potential likelihood to pick up these knocks. And the other thing that I felt as well when you were talking about Hearts was that, you know, we know that injuries last season to key players can have derailed their season to an extent, you know, from starting very positively, at least in terms of results, and then it, you know, kind of going quite poorly, at least in the league. Again, they have major issues in terms of injuries. So Suter's still out. You mentioned Naismith, who bizarrely was in the Scotland squad, but was clearly, to some extent at least, injured, you know, throughout this period, and is still, well, you know, he's out at a weekend still. Connor Washington is out now. Walker's out. Garuccio's out long term. Quite a lot of, you know, kind of injury issues around that squad. We don't know, you know, reasons, and it's not to say there is any sort of underlying cause for a particular team to have a lot of injuries, but it's just of note that you know, that they seem to have picked up a lot. You know, maybe Levine has taken to marching people up and down the sand dunes on the beach a little bit too much as a fix to their kind of performance woes. But yeah, anyway, I think that's a kind of important thing for us to keep an eye on, and see whether there are, you know, well, at least for Dorns and for Bryson and people like that, and just to see how Naismith is able to come back from this and how many minutes he actually plays this season. The final thing on this kind of subject, I did kind of briefly ask you, is there a particular injury that you've seen when playing football that you want to give a shout out to? Anything that was horrific, or is that a you know, a touchy subject for you? Have you suffered one yourself?
Yeah, I was, the only one I can think of is I broke my wrist and elbow playing football. Went up for a header, a guy pushed me in the back, and the way that fell, broke both of them. Worst part is he's one of my mates, so so that wasn't ideal, if I'm being honest. I can't think of too many other things that I've seen. What about you?
Oh, it was a wrist injury that I saw get, you know, happen to somebody. But given that you've had one of your own, that's maybe a sore point. But
that's why I never made it.
Yeah, if only you had that wrist to knock in all those handball goals that, you know. But yeah, you know, the sort of thing that can happen to a wrist. You can imagine what this kind of injury was like. You know, a wrist ending up with half of it kind of, you know, a good 10 inches above where the rest of it is. So yeah, let's move on from there. Talking of all those kind of injuries to Hearts, and also I guess we should give mention to the fact that Hibs have been without Martin Boyle for some time as well. We're going to have a look at some matches that took place this just past weekend in the Scottish setup. First one we want to look at is the kind of battle of the managers on the edge. This was Hibs against Hearts. Took place at Easter Road, and of course ended in a 2-1 victory for Hearts, with Craig Levine keeping his job for just a little bit longer at least, and putting Heckenbottom even further under pressure. What were your thoughts on this game, you know, in terms of the action, kind of any takeaways from it, Gavin?
Do we have to talk about the game?
Did you not enjoy it much at all?
The actual game itself, right, so there were some individual things that are worth talking about and moments in the game that are definitely worth talking about, but the actual football that was played was pretty poor, pretty...
Well, it's an Edinburgh derby. Did you come into this with expectations of good football? Because, you know, have you watched the Edinburgh derby before?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, I'm just naive. Maybe I'm just, you know, thinking that the purest enemy is going, you know what, this will be a good game. This will be the 4-3 thriller with expansive free-flowing football, and we'll see Machino unleashed. And, no, it wasn't. It was it was turgid. That's how I would describe it. You know what, like, the game, it had all the things you mentioned, right? There was intensity, there was tactical battles, there was some things from both sides that were good and bad. I guess for me, to start with, so obviously it's a great result for Hearts, the actual result, but in terms of how they played, I felt they were really poor. And they actually, at times, I feel like they don't know what they're trying to do in terms of their setup, what is their attacking style, what is their, you know, their way of playing football, because I'm not too sure what it is, and I feel like Demure and Whelan is a horrible combination. Okay. I don't like it. I'm not sold on Demure. I'm not sure why you would play him over Andy Irvine, who so far has looked pretty good. But Craig Levein's got this weird thing where he just drops players for no reason and doesn't, you know, make any sort of rhyme or reason to it. From a Paul Heckenbottom stance, I think that Hibs have got an identity, but they're not executing that identity very well at all. They have a way of playing, or they try to play a certain way, but the players are just not performing and not doing the things that you would expect. I think I mentioned to you earlier about Ryan Porteous. I think he had a really poor game, and he had a pretty poor game with a costly error against Kilmarnock last week as well. So to me, you know, that's maybe a little bit of alarm bells about him, considering he was such a big player for them before his injury. I think I said to you his stats per Y Scout were really bad. So it was, you know, 44% pass accuracy for his forward passes, to me, which is quite a concern when you try to build up from the back. When you compare that to Hamlin, who was at 75%, that's a big sort of drop off. And yeah, it felt like just during the game, it was just like he was just a bit lost throughout. Just that he didn't have his sort of usual, you know, aggressive demeanor and, you know, sort of that. I'm not going to say composure, because I don't think he's a composed player, but I think he's a very, you know, intense player. But intense in a sort of good way, where it can, you know, intimidate opponents. But he just didn't look right at all. So yeah, I'm not too sure on that one. It was
okay.
It was just a bit poor overall from Hibs from that perspective.
Well, I mean, I think that's some interesting points. I think in terms of Hibs and what you were saying about Porteous, at least in terms of the forward passing. I'm not absolving him of blame, but I would say that from my viewpoint, there are some issues beyond just him in terms of Hibs' failure to progress the ball. I think that there's a lack of options coming from the midfield to do that. I would be interested to see, you know, whether Scott Allen can come a little bit deeper and offer some options in spaces and things for, you know, people like Porteous, because I didn't feel like there was enough of that. I also think that there were quite a few times when maybe the ball was going out to Stevenson at left back and he was really struggling to progress it you know, in a way that got it up the pitch. And if Hibs did resort to going a little bit longer, well, at least for the spell of the game when Hearts had three centre-backs, there was just no chance for Canberry against them. They didn't really have... I know that you said they kind of have a way of playing, but I felt that they didn't have enough balance in the attacking third in this game in Hibs. So, you know, they had they had an option on the left in Horgan, but there was limited options on the right in terms of an attacking threat, at least until Middleton came on later on. So I felt that these things really didn't help Hibs kind of actually, you know, use the ball and progress things and make any chances. I also thought in terms of link up. So you mentioned Machino there, and as a comparator to what he did, I think that for people like Scott Allen and Stevie Mallon, there was a lack of kind of interplay between them. It would be, I'm still, you know, Mallon is going to get plaudits for the goal that he scored, and rightfully so. It's a ridiculously good strike, but I'm a little bit at a loss as to what he adds beyond lots of shots from distance and the very, very occasional goal that you get from doing that. I think Hibs need to find a way, if they're going to play those guys together, to get them actually playing together, if you see what I mean.
Totally.
And by contrast to that, when you were talking about Hearts stylistically, well, I think that's the kind of key for Hearts stylistically, to get Machino involved in a kind of attacking third. There was quite a lot of nice interplay between him and Mulroney, in my view. I think Machino looks really quite exciting. He's got really good feet, finds space well, releases the ball when it's right to. You know, he doesn't kind of hog it like you might think that a kind of creative kind of 10 might, who's maybe not very experienced and very high level. So that was really exciting for me. I also thought that Hearts adjusted formation and style when it was maybe appropriate to do so. So they switched from a three at the back after about an hour to more of a four at the back. And I wasn't super, super impressed with Hearts, and I do think that there's a lot of narrative that's going to be applied naturally so after a derby win in a very, yep. very tense situation when two managers are under threat. There wasn't, I mean, it wasn't like Hearts absolutely bossed this in any way. You know, it was a fairly lucky goal, as much as, you know, Hickey deserves, you know, credit for taking the opportunity. I don't know. Not a particularly good game, but a very, very important result, I guess, and what an important week, I think, ahead. That's the kind of key thing for me to take away at this point. Everything in terms of the way this is viewed could really change. So tomorrow night we've got Hearts hosting Aberdeen in the League Cup quarter final, and Hibs away to Kilmarnock. Those are games that could go any way, in my view, really. Hearts could really struggle against Aberdeen potentially at home, and then there'd be a whole different perspective on this. If Hibs lose that away to Kilmarnock and then they're hosting Celtic on Saturday morning, which could be a very tough game, then things could be very, very difficult for Heckenbottom. Yep. But in contrast to that, you know, if he manages to potentially get something against Celtic, then, you know, it's still pretty tight. You know, the bottom six of the table, is only separated by around 4 points. So, you know, things can turn around quite quickly. Any final things to say about that match before we move on?
Yeah, just quickly on something you mentioned about Stevie Mallon. So he played in a sort of, it was more of a sort of inverted right sort of wing position that I didn't think suited him too well, and he kept wanting to drift into centrally, which left Naismith, I felt, quite exposed at times. But then there was something about when I was looking at the stats after it that sort of stuck out to me, and that was about Glenn Middleton, actually. So when he came on, he had 6 out of 6 successful dribbles in that game, where he got by his man and was able to create something. And he's also got the highest average dribble success rate out of all the Hibs wingers right now, all the Hibs attacking players. I think it's an average, and it's 7.5 dribbles per game. Obviously, that'll take into, you know, his some of his time at Rangers, but that's his last 5 matches. So to me, I would like to see Heckenbottom address that and put an actual winger in the right wing position. And Middleton will know about, you know, the sort of defensive expectations as well, playing with Tavernier behind him. He'll know that he'll have to have, you know, some of that applied to his game. So I feel like for Hibs, that could be something that, you know, I would want to see more of. And could maybe help them in these next games where they're going to have to make the most of their opportunities. And again, just to echo your sort of thoughts of, you know, Heckenbottom could be under a lot more pressure. But as we've seen, you know, Craig Levein out was all the chance 2 weeks ago, and you're not hearing anything about that now. So it's a fickle game.
Okay, great. Thanks for your kind of recap of that. The next game that we're going to look at, yet more Hearts, but these are Kelty Hearts. So Kelty Hearts lost 3-0 to Auchinleck Talbot in the first round of the Scottish Cup. There's a really good article by Blair Newman on his Substack site, which goes into a bit of tactical analysis of this match, which I would recommend checking out. But Gavin, give me your thoughts on this match, you know, in terms of the detail of it and what you kind of took away from it.
So first of all, I didn't get to see the match live, but it was great that it was on on terrestrial TV for people to pick up and watch. So that was really good. The turnout for the game looked excellent from what I've seen, so that, you know, that's another positive from a, you know, that perspective. Kelty Hearts are, you know, doing quite a lot of things off the field to try and make themselves successful, putting in a lot of money. But then after that, and when I actually got to the game, I wasn't sure if this was actually Kelty Hearts highlights channel I was watching, because it was all Auchinleck. Kelty offered pretty much next to nothing in the highlights that were put forward. I think there was some early warning signs for Kelty in terms of the threat that Auchinleck were going to offer from set pieces. I think, you know, 2 out of 3 goals came from set pieces, and to me, you know, that's something where you would like to see your manager maybe try and make some adjustments and recognise that. I'm still very skeptical about Barry Ferguson as a manager. He had a similar sort of scenario at Clyde where he had a lot of money put at him with a bit of a, I'm not going to say superstar team, but you know, a very good team at that level, and he was not successful with them. And I worry that he's going to do the same thing with Kelly Hearts. I think they looked a bit suspect in terms of their setup for the opener. And then I think that was I think it was the third goal for Kelty, where it was actually, there was five Kelty Hearts players in the box versus three Auchinleck players, and Auchinleck managed to win two headers to score a goal. So to me, that's just, you know, and the cross came in from the, you know, I think it was the right sideline, and it was, you know, a bit of a hopeful ball, but the fact that, you know, Auchinleck can win two pretty clean headers to score, to me, would be a major alarm bell from a Kelty perspective, and you know, something that you'd be hoping that can be cut out. I can't say that I've seen a lot of Kelty Hearts, and yeah, I think that would definitely be an area of focus, and also in just in terms of an attacking threat, they offered next to nothing. There was one chance for Nathan Austin, where he was sort of one on one, but hit it straight at the keeper. So yeah, I would be a bit disappointed with the investment that's gone on at the club, but fair play to Auchinleck because they went to a difficult place and they've got a great result, and hopefully, you know, they can get another sort of cup dream like they did last year, getting all the way to Tynecastle. Did they play Hearts at home? I can't remember.
Tynecastle. Yeah.
So you know, getting that great payday for a club like Auchinleck, so hopefully they can do something again. But yeah, definite disappointment from a Kelty perspective.
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that, Gavin. I think it looked to me like Auchinleck had some good examples of pressing, quite nice structure to their team. But the key thing that kind of stood out for me was, you know, unfortunately, the defensive deficiencies from Kelty. Just seemed like the marking in the box for any sort of wide delivery was a little bit poor. So that was a definite issue for them. And I think while we mention Auchinleck, we should maybe give a shout out to their manager. I think I'd seen you with a kind of fairly wild take on Twitter that he should be in contention for another Ayrshire job, the Ayr United post, now that McCall's gone off to Partick Thistle. I'm not too sure about that, but definitely Tommy Sloan deserves some credit for the work he's put in at Auchinleck Talbot and all the kind of trophies that they've won there over the years that he's been with them. The next game, I guess, to look at is one from League One in Scotland. So this was East Fife 2, Dumbarton 2. This was quite an interesting game where Dumbarton went 2-0 up shortly after half-time, despite the fact that it looked to me, at least, that East Fife were kind of fairly dominant in terms of chances and possession. East Fife are, after this, you know, result, after the weekend's matches, they're second in League One, just by one goal on goal difference. They're actually joint with Raith Rovers, who are top on 15 points. And Dumbarton are in sixth, but they're one of three teams that have 10 points. So a win next week would actually potentially put them back up to fourth in a playoff spot. It's a 10-team league, but there are well, it's pretty tight. The team in fourth is on 10 points. The team in eighth is on 9 points. And next, East Fife are away to Falkirk, who are in third, and Dumbarton host Clyde, who are in seventh, so it could be all change very, very quickly. What were your thoughts on this game, Gavin? Any kind of detail you want to go through with me?
First of all, huge props and shout out to the East Fife media team, because the standard of the highlights package that they put together was excellent. It put some of the, you know, the packages I've seen for a Scottish Premiership team to absolute shame. So really well done to those guys. It was really nicely laid out, and the standard of the camera they used was really good. I think that from what I've seen, before Dumbarton took the lead, East Fife actually played some quite nice stuff. I thought they had some really nice movements.
Very tidy.
And it looked like they, again, it looked like they knew like the transitions that they were trying to do, and there was a lot of sort of smart play and interlinking of different players. The fullback Dunsmore looked really good. I think he stood out for me. Created a lot of opportunities for East Fife. Probably should have had a penalty before Dumbarton scored. It looked like a penalty to me, but he got booked for simulation, which was, I guess, a strange decision. East Fife in this game, it felt like, could have had about 73 penalties if you watch the highlights. But then obviously, you know, it's a football cliche, but then Dumbarton giving them the sucker punch. But it felt like there was a warning sign again from set pieces in this game. So immediately before Dumbarton scored, it was basically a copycat move of the corner. The first one, they got a really good header, the keeper makes a smart save. They just done the exact same thing, the exact same play again, and scored from it. So to me, that's maybe where, and it's hard, right, from these sort of things, because you don't know how much of it is pre-planned, and you don't know how much of it is, thought out. But if it was, then it's great execution by Dumbarton. And from an East Fife point of view, maybe you would want to recognise what's just happened and try and adjust it and look at how did a player get a free header in our box? How can we stop that from happening again? Because if you check these highlights out, that was it was like watching the same highlight.
I thought that was a really good corner routine.
Yeah, it was
actually
good.
For that opener. I mean, you're right, absolutely. They did get a bit of a warning, and perhaps East Fife could have dealt with it better. But it was a nice run from the near post towards the corner tick taker to kind of cause a bit of confusion, and then the two kind of Dumbarton players who were potentially going to attack the ball kind of rotated a wee bit, and the guy who eventually scored kind of lost his marker quite well. Carry on, Gavin.
I actually really enjoyed watching the highlights of this game, and it felt like East Fife sort of stuck to the way of playing. They had a lot of nice moves throughout the game, even when they were down 2-0, they sort of kept quite a good press, I felt, as well. It looked like they had quite a sort of good setup with that. So props to Darren Young. I think that he's, quite a young manager who, has been linked with a few jobs in the Championship. So if he can't get East Fife up, I'd like to see what he can do at a higher level. I just felt it was a really good game. It was a nice, I think Stuart Murdoch, actually, I'll just give him a shout out for his goal. Again, when I'm talking about warning signs, there was a highlight in I think it was one of the first opportunities where Stuart Murdoch was a threat from an aerial attack from East Fife, and it was a similar sort of move to the back post, and then he eventually scored from that for East Fife's opener. So maybe, again, just from a Dumbarton point of view, you would maybe want them to try and recognise what happened there. How could they stop that from happening again? Yeah, a really good game, and I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. So credit to the two managers. I think Jim Duffy and Darren Young. It was a good game, and it looks like a really cool stadium that hopefully I'll be able to get to one day.
Yeah, lovely, nice looking view, isn't it, of the hills in the background and everything. I really agree with your take on this, particularly in what you were saying about East Fife kind of having a nice start to this in terms of the way that they played. I was a little bit concerned going into watching this because I'd noticed that these two teams were second and third in their league for the number of fouls that they give away. So I was expecting something, with maybe some kind of dirty play and so on, but I thought that East Fife make some nice combinations, nice movement, keen to pass the ball about in the kind of final third, which was really good. The other thing that kind of struck me, I mean, you kind of described the goals and the kind of chances that maybe gave some warning signs of those goals, but the other thing that kind of stuck out to me about those was that there weren't any open play goals in this game. There were four goals, but there were two penalties, one from a corner and one, from a kind of free kick to the back post and a kind of knock-in from there. So that was kind of interesting. So opportunities, I guess, at that level, particularly to make these kind of margins count. So having corner routines of the sort that Dumbarton executed can be really valuable there. Just kind of interesting to note that about it. But a good match, and like you said, really good highlights put on by East Fife there, so that was enjoyable. The other thing I wanted to say about that game was just to give a little kind of shout out to Anton Dowds, who quite a young player, 22 years old, at East Fife, who's got the most assists in that league with 4 so far this season. As I said, he's just 22. That's a guy to keep an eye on. I think he's this is his first club at this kind of level. Before that, he was playing for Heriot University. So, somebody to keep an eye on that seems to be doing well, at League One level for the first time. The next kind of match that we're going to have a look at is one down another level to League Two. So this is Albion Rovers versus Edinburgh City, and this ended up in a 3-1 victory for Edinburgh City. This result puts Edinburgh into second in the division on 16 points after 7 games, and it puts Albion Rovers in 6th on 8 points, but they're just a point off 4th place, which would, obviously there's a long way to go in the season, but would be a spot in the playoffs. Albion actually drew with the team in 4th or Queen's Park last week. I think they'll be a little bit disappointed not to have gained some more ground on them with this game, but Edinburgh City actually host Queen's Park this coming Saturday, and Albion are away at a place Cowden Beath, who are just a point behind Edinburgh, so they could both kind of do each other a favour in their games this coming Saturday. A lot of potential for kind of a lot of movement in that league early on. What were your kind of thoughts on this game, Gavin, and to take away?
Yeah, so first of all, Edinburgh City's opener I thought was a nice move. I liked the sort of interchange down the left-hand side, I think, or the right-hand side. And it was a nice finish from Alex Harris with a good run into the box. That was a really good opening goal within the first 2 minutes. And then, Danny Handlin's goal for the second from Edinburgh City was a fantastic strike. Ball sort of breaks to him from the corner. He sort of steadies himself, and it was really good technique from Handlin to score. If you've not seen it, then I'd advise to go check it out. And there was also an instance from him later on in the highlights package where he'd done a really nice sort of move to dribble past sort of two players and create an opportunity for himself where he hit it just over. Handlin is a former Hibs player that's played at a high level for Hibs, still young, but has suffered a few bad injuries, as is Alex Harris. Similar sort of story. Hibs, Falkirk, injuries, now Edinburgh City. McDonough is making the most of his sort of connections with these clubs, I think, and those are both players to me that they're young enough. We're taking a gamble on a younger injured player can have a higher ceiling versus what we spoke about earlier on with a player at the sort of end of their career. So for me, that's two sort of good players for Edinburgh City. I felt for Albion Rovers goal, for me, the goalkeeper Aidan McAdams, who's on loan from Rangers, could have done a lot better. Sort of parries it out into the sort of box. It takes a sort of awkward bounce, but I still felt he could have pushed it to the side rather than back into the in front of him. And I guess he'll be disappointed with that. And then for the Edinburgh City final goal, some pretty poor defending that let Smith in with an opportunity. It was a nice finish from him, but the actual, if you see the highlight again, it was pretty poor defending, which I think Kevin Harper from Albion Rovers, who I think, even so, they've got beat in this game and they've had a bit of an up and down season, deserves a lot of credit considering, the challenges he's been faced with Albion Rovers that, many tipped them to be hot favourites to get relegated. And it looks like they're certainly putting up a fight, and it looks like they're quite an attacking team with a lot of goals and a lot of games. I think both these managers are good managers that are, for me, ones that I'd like to see take that step up. If it's not with those clubs, it'll be with a club higher up, because they both do some really good things.
Okay. I agree entirely with your points there. I also enjoyed watching the highlights of this. I was kind of quite keen to see a couple of the players involved. So Alex Harris, who you mentioned, scored the kind of opener and has 3 goals and 5 assists, I think, so far in the league this season for Edinburgh City. He's somebody that we've mentioned on a podcast before, but really because of his historical connection. His great-great-uncle played for the Wembley Wizards that beat England for Scotland a long, long time ago, Jimmy Dunn, and I guess that would have been the late 1920s. So I was kind of keen to see him, and as well as that, a couple of players for Albion Rovers I was keen to see. So Ewan East, who I think started his career as a left back, played for Queen's Park. Was that ring any bells as somebody else, Andy Robertson, that's done that? But he's only 19, and now you know plays up front. But anyway, he scored 4 goals so far in league for Albion Rovers this season. So I was kind of looking forward to seeing him, and also Declan Byrne, who's also got 4 goals, and got one of those goals in this game. So that was kind of interest to me, and it was nice to be able to watch these players. I felt that some of Albion Rovers' defending was pretty passive, and not really as aggressive or structured as I think it could have been. You know me, so you were effusive in your praise for Handling's long shot goal. Obviously, I'm going to look at this sort of thing critically. I think it was terrible defending, both in terms of the setup for the corner. So, you know, if you have an opportunity to watch the highlights, this will make more sense to you. But essentially, Edinburgh City sent somebody short to the corner, and Albion sent a man out with him, but they didn't. And Edinburgh had put all of their players that were in the box quite close into the goal, almost into the 6-yard area, to create that kind of big pocket of space around the kind of middle and kind of edge of the box. And they had had somebody stationed Handling, of course, on the edge of the box, kind of on the side closest to the corner kick taker. And they got the ball to him quite quickly, and it was only the person who had trailed the kind of short option, the dummy option out towards the corner kick taker, who could try and close him down. And of course, he had no chance to get anywhere near him before he unleashed the shot. And yeah, it was a good shot, a good enough strike. I do also think that potentially I might expect a goalkeeper to get something to that. But yeah, that's me being super critical. But in general, yeah, I felt that there were some other examples of that where Albion were maybe a little bit passive, and somebody like Handling, who you kind of know has a good distance shot, they were maybe giving him a little bit too much space around the box. But yeah, overall, a good game to watch, and another excellent result for Edinburgh City. And as we said, that's them up to second. Those are our games that we said we would have a look at in terms of analysis this week. However, we're not entirely done with those teams. So, Gavin, the final thing we're going to talk about on this show tonight is some football strips with the kind of announcement of Nike's 90s influenced third kits. We're going to have a little look at those and some other strips that we might like currently. But the first thing we have to do is discuss those 8 teams that we've just kind of analysed in terms of their football, and tell me whose kit do you like, and whose kit, if you want to, do you dislike out of that bunch?
Okay, so there was 2 that I was sort of tied for in terms of the nicest kit. I think this season's Hearts kit home strip is really nice. I like that. I like the sort of the design on it, the sort of broken diamond or shattered diamond, however you want to describe it, that's sort of used. I think that's really nice. And I also really like the Auchinlech strip. I thought that was pretty nice. But I guess the strip that I feel like I have to talk about, and you know, if we've gained any Albion Rovers fans, I'm probably about to lose them all. Because that yellow and red strip is absolutely horrific. It actually hurts my eyes to look at. I feel like, do you remember when you were younger, you got those sort of 90s sort of bobbles head football, like little figures, where it was like Les Ferdinand with a giant head? I feel like that's the sort of strips that those players wore, and Albion Rovers have just never got out of that. So yeah, that Albion strip for me is a bit of a disaster. Just, it's not a nice combo. So sorry, Coatbridge. I'm all out on that.
Okay,
strip.
Well, it's funny because we really agree on some aspects of this and really disagree on some others. So for me, firstly, I was quite into the Albion Rovers kit. Yeah, it's kind of bold.
That's the West End coming
in. West End. Okay, so it reminded me a little bit of Roy of the Rovers. So that was the kind of thing that, I don't know, I bought into it around. So Roy of the Rovers, Melchester Rovers and all that. That's what it made me think of. I just also thought it was quite bold. I mean, it's a yellow top, it's red shorts, it's kind of out there, but it's not dull. I think if you're at that level, you maybe can't expect the team to be playing in some glossy black number with gold trim. I'm not advocating for some sort of fluorescent numbers or some clashing kind of, you know, weird print everywhere, but I didn't mind it. I thought it actually worked okay. So we completely disagree on that one. However, we do agree on Auchinleck Talbot. That's their away kit, and I thought it was really, really nice. So for anybody that's not seen it, it's kind of bright blue, but it's got some shoulder bits that are kind of navy and gold. And I think the key thing for me is that those kind of bits, they kind of match the badge and the sleeve cuffs in terms of the colour scheme, so it all kind of fits together quite well. It's really simple, but it's dead nice, and I think the kind of darker blue sort of navy shorts and socks kind of worked well with it too. So I was really impressed by that kit for Auchinleck, really nice. And I guess you mentioned the Hearts home kit, I know they didn't wear it, but the away kit that everybody loves, the black one, I'm not sold on that. It's too much like a polo shirt for me, so just wanted to kind of mention that. But the kit that I liked least out of these eight was the Kelty Hearts top. So the white armband things, I mean, they're like kind of armbands. I just don't understand the positioning of that as a style choice. Do you know what I mean, Gavin? They had the kind of white hoop bits just, you know, at the start of the kind of sleeve section. What is the point in that? Why? What was that meant to be or kind of illustrate? It's not. It doesn't look good. It's not something, you know. Get that in a bin for me. So those are our takes on those eight teams, at least in terms of our favourite and our least favourite. What about then these new Nike third kits with the 90s styling? Have you been taking the Monaco lookbook to bed with you? Have you got a real favourite out of all these kits? What do you think of them?
Is the Monaco kit?
Oh, sorry, that's Kappa. Yeah, I'm confusing things. Yeah, too many nice things. Yes. And I just can't. But yeah, so the night ones are teams like Spurs and Roma and Chelsea and Atletico Madrid and Barcelona and PSG and Inter Milan. My apologies, you're right, Monaco's but pretty good too. Give me your thoughts.
So I'm actually going to bypass Nike completely, right? I know you're asking about Nike. They're all beautiful. They are all beautiful, but oh my good God, those Monaco kits. And I'm glad that, you know, that we brought that up. They're the nicest sort of three kits I think I've ever seen. And I love that Monaco got like some sort of model company, pull it together in some sort of like catalog-esque, it looks like something you would be like if you were shopping on ASOS or something like that. You know, you'd be just scrolling through and you would see this exact picture. So I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of that. It's, as far as I know, it's not any of the players or any of the playing squad that are also modeling it. Huge fan of that. Because, you know, like there was a picture I seen on Instagram. I think it was actually from Edinburgh City. They've signed some sort of sponsorship deal with a food company or whatever, and it's just a really awkward pose of the players in this cafe in their strip, and it just looks so unnatural. Whereas you know what, these models, they do it absolute justice. They know how to strike a pose, and where better to strike a pose than in Monaco with a nice kit. So you know what, sorry Nike, Monaco and Kappa have just,
which is your favourite out of the three kits? So for everybody, there's the, as expected, home one, which is a kind of white and red thing with the kind of diagonal part, you know, through that. There's a black kit with kind of gold trim, and there's a sort of mint kind of green kit with the kind of blue trim. What's your favourite out of the three?
I'm going to say the classic home top. I just feel like it brings back lots of memories of, you know, Monaco in the late 90s, early 2000s had an incredible team. You know, I'm thinking back to, you know, they had like Trezeguet, Barthez, Philippe Cristanval, who was a former Football Manager legend, Sabri Lamouchi, Marco Simeone, Risa before he moved to Liverpool, you know, that full Dado Pirso before he went to Rangers. Lots of players that, you know, I just have memories. And that kit sort of brings me back to that. And it's an absolute peach.
Yeah, it's great.
So yeah, I'm cool. All in on that.
I'm all about the colour scheme. For me, it's got to be the kind of minty, greeny blue kind of one. I just love that colour. And no surprise that my favourite of the Nike third kits with the kind of 90s styling with these old Nike logos and the kind of same type of neck that Dortmund had back in the day and the throwback colours is the Barcelona one with a kind of relatively similar sort of teal colour and a really nice kind of pattern where they've kind of used the badge kind of through the kit. And I also really like, it's not a 90s style one, but it is a Nike one, the Inter Milan away kit from this season, which is kind of light blue, teal, mint colour with black and gold collar and cuffs kind of trim. So those are ones I love. Any other kits from this season that you've really, really liked that you want to mention, Gavin?
I think just quickly, there's none specifically I want to mention, but I thought I would give a quick plug to the article that Chris Sampson wrote, the top 10 definitive Scottish kits of this season, which is on our website, which you can go check out. He ranked all the kits from all the clubs in Scotland this year, and big props to Sinéad Shmuir, who you know, dominated it with their home and away strip that they brought out this season. So I just thought I would give that a shout out specifically. There's loads of kits that I love, and you know, I feel like it's a subject that me and you, you know, we spoke about before, and we could probably do it a million times over, and you know, have another great conversation. So I thought I'd point out that article by Chris.
Definitely, it's well worth reading. And for me, a couple of other ones just to add into the mix. Out with Scotland from this season would be the Arsenal away kind of yellow throwback that perhaps we'll see Tierney in quite soon. And also there's a Corinthians kit, Brazilian team. Their third kit by Nike is sort of black, but it's got sort of white crowd scenes from their stadium in it as well. It's well worth looking out for that one. But basically anything bar the terrible Man City away one with the sort of road safety or crime scene tape on the shoulders. Not generally a fan of Puma kits, and that one is particularly bad, I think. Anything to add to the discussion about strips at all, Gavin? Apart from that, yeah, we definitely encourage people to go and check out Chris's article on the website.
No, I think that's it for me. If you're listening to this and you feel like there's a strip that we should watch out, please hit us up on Twitter and tag us in a picture of the kit that you think deserves a bit of love.
Absolutely. And whereabouts on Twitter should they come to do that, Gavin?
Love what you've just done there. You can check us out at twitter.com/purefootball, and they can get you over at Owen James Brown.
That's the one, yeah. Just want to thank everybody for listening yet again. And as I said at the top of the show, if you would like to, please leave us a review. Also, if you want to leave a review specifically for the Pure Championship podcast, if you've been listening to that, please do. It'd be really nice for Chris and Cammy to hear your thoughts on that. Gavin, any final thoughts to leave your listeners with?
No, if you can just make sure that, you know, if you enjoy the work that we're doing, please get involved with us on social media, or, you know, tell a friend about the podcast and tell them to tell a friend about the podcast, because it really helps us. And, you know, I think we both love what we do, and it's, you know, a great opportunity for us to, you know, pass thoughts on about Scottish football and all the amazing things that happen. So it's really important that, you know, we get your support.
Excellent. Thanks very much for listening. Good night.